When you practice the meditation in part 3, you'll go into an even deeper alpha state. On a daily basis, your brain moves into alpha without much effort on your part. For example, when you're learning something new in a lecture, generally your brain is functioning in low to mid-range beta. You're listening to the message and analyzing the concepts being presented. Then, when you've heard enough, or you particularly like something interesting that applies to you, you naturally pause, and your brain slips into alpha. You do this because that information is being consolidated in your gray matter. And as you stare into space, you are attending to your thoughts and making them more real than the external world. The moment that happens, your frontal lobe is now wiring that information into your cerebral architecture. And, like magic, you can remember what you just learned. Theta. In adults, theta waves emerge in the twilight state or lucid state, during which some people find themselves half awake and half asleep. The conscious mind is awake, while the body is somewhat asleep. This is the state when a hypnotherapist can access the subconscious mind. In theta, we are more programmable because there is no veil between the conscious and subconscious minds. Delta. For most of us, delta waves are representative of deep sleep. In this realm, there is very little conscious awareness, and the body is restoring itself. As this overview demonstrates, when we move into slower brainwave states, we move deeper into the inner world of the subconscious mind. The reverse is also true. As we move into higher brainwave states, the more we become conscious and attend to the external world. With repeated practice, these terrains of the mind will begin to become familiar to you. Just like anything else you persist at, you will come to notice what each brainwave pattern feels like. You'll know when you are analyzing or thinking too much in beta. You'll observe when you are not present because you're swinging from the emotions of the past, trying to anticipate a known future. You'll also sense when you are in alpha or theta, since you'll feel its coherence. In time, you will know when you are there and when you are not. Refer Figure 8C, Brainwaves. Since we spend most of our conscious waking day with our attention on the external environment and functioning in beta, let's talk about the three levels of these brainwave patterns. This understanding will facilitate moving from beta to alpha and ultimately to theta in the meditative state. 1. Low-range beta is defined as relaxed, interested attention ranging from 13 to 15 hertz, or cycles per second. If you are enjoying reading a book and are familiar with the material, your brain would probably be firing in low beta, because you are paying a certain degree of attention without any vigilance. 2. Mid-range beta is produced during focused attention on sustained external stimuli. Learning is a good example. If I were to test you on what you read while enjoying that book in low beta, you would have to perk up a bit, and thus there would be more neocortical activity, such as analytical thinking. Mid-beta operates between 16 and 22 hertz. With mid-range beta, or even low-range beta to some extent, these frequencies reflect our conscious or rational thinking and our alertness. They are a result of the neocortex taking in stimuli from the environment through all of our senses and assembling the information into a package to create a level of mind. As you can imagine, with this focus on what we're seeing, hearing, tasting, feeling, and smelling, comes a great deal of complexity and activity within the brain to produce that level of stimulation. 3. High-range beta is characterized by any brainwave pattern from 22 to 50 hertz. High beta patterns are observed during stressful situations where those nasty survival chemicals are produced in the body. Maintaining the sustained focus in such a high arousal state is not the type of focused attention we use to learn, create, dream, problem solve, or even heal. In truth, we could say that the brain in high beta is functioning with too much focused concentration. The mind is too amped up and the body is too stimulated to be in any semblance of order. When you're in high beta, just know for now that you are probably focusing on something too much and it's hard to stop. Emergencies always create a considerable need for increased electrical activity in the brain. Nature has gifted us with the fight-or-flight response to help us quickly focus in potentially dangerous situations. The strong physiological arousal of the heart, lungs, and sympathetic nervous system leads to a dramatic change in psychological states. Our perception, behaviors, attitudes and emotions are all altered. This type of attention is very different from what we normally use. It causes us to act like a revved-up animal with a big memory bank. The scales of attention become tipped towards the external environment, causing an over-focused state of mind. Anxiety, worry, anger, pain, suffering, frustration, fear, and even competitive states of mind induced high-range beta waves to predominate during the crisis. In the short term, this serves all organisms well. There is nothing wrong with this narrow, over-focused range of attention. We get the job done because it affords us the ability to accomplish so many things. However, if we remain in emergency mode for a long time, high beta knocks us far out of balance because maintaining it requires an immense amount of energy. And because this is the most reactive, unstable, and volatile of brain patterns. When high beta becomes chronic and uncontrolled, the brain gets juiced up beyond the healthy range. Unfortunately, high beta is terribly overutilized by the majority of the population. We are obsessive or compulsive, insomniac or chronically fatigued, anxious or depressed, forcibly pushing in all directions to be all-powerful, or hopelessly holding on to our pain to feel utterly powerless, competing to get ahead, or victimized by our circumstances. To put this into perspective, think about the normal functioning of the brain as part of the central nervous system, which controls and coordinates all other systems of the body. It keeps your heart beating, digests your food, regulates your immune system, maintains your respiratory rate, balances your hormones, controls your metabolism, and eliminates waste, to name a few. As long as the mind is coherent and orderly, messages that travel from the brain to the body through the spinal cord will produce synchronized signals for a balanced, healthy body. However, many people spend their waking days in a sustained high-frequency beta state. To them, everything is an emergency. The brain stays constantly on a very fast cycle which taxes the entire system. Living in this thin margin of brain waves is like driving a car in first gear while simultaneously stepping on the gas. These people drive through their lives without ever stopping to consider shifting gears into other brain states. Their continual repetition of survival-based thoughts creates feelings of anger, fear, sadness, anxiety, depression, competition, aggression, insecurity, and frustration, among others. People become so caught up in these intoxicating emotions that they try to analyze their problems from within these familiar feelings, which only perpetuates more thoughts over-focused on survival. Also, recall that we can turn on the stress response by thought alone. The way we are thinking reinforces the very state of the brain and body, which then causes us to think the same way. And the loop goes on. It's the serpent eating its tail. Long-term high beta produces an unhealthy cocktail of stress chemicals, which can tip the brain out of balance like a symphony orchestra out of tune. Parts of the brain may stop coordinating effectively with other areas. Entire regions work separately and in opposition. Like a house divided against itself, the brain no longer communicates in an organized, holistic fashion. As stress chemicals force the thinking brain, neocortex, to become more segregated, we may function like someone with multiple personality disorder. Only we're experiencing it all at once, instead of one personality at a time. Of course, when disorderly, incoherent signals from the brain relay erratic, mixed electrochemical messages through the central nervous system to the rest of the physiological systems. This puts the body out of balance, upsetting its homeostasis or equilibrium, and setting the stage for disease. If we live in this high-stress mode of chaotic brain function for extended periods, the heart is impacted, leading to arrhythmias or high blood pressure. Digestion begins to fail, causing indigestion, reflux, and related symptoms. And immune function weakens, resulting in colds, allergies, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, and more. All of these consequences stem from an unbalanced nervous system that is operating incoherently due to the action of stress chemicals and high-range beta brainwaves reaffirming the outer world is the only reality. The stress I've been discussing is a product of our addiction to the big three. The problem isn't that we are conscious and aware, but that our focus in high beta is almost exclusively on our environment. People, things, places. Our bodies, parts and functions. I'm hungry. I'm too weak. I want a better nose. I'm fat compared to her. And time. Hurry up, the clock is winding down. In high beta, the outer world appears to be more real than the inner world. Our attention and conscious awareness primarily focus on everything that makes up the external environment. Thus, we identify more readily with those material elements. We criticize everyone we know. We judge the way our bodies look. We're over-focused on our problems. We cling to things we own out of fear that we might lose them. We busy ourselves with places we have to go, and we're preoccupied with time. That leaves us little processing power to pay attention to the changes that we truly want to make, to go inward, to observe and monitor our thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. It's difficult for us to focus on our inner reality when we are overfixated on our outer world. In general, we can't concentrate on anything other than the big three. We can't open our minds beyond the boundaries of our narrow focus, and we obsess about problems rather than thinking about solutions. Why does it take such effort to let go of the external and go within? The brain in high beta can't easily shift gears into the imaginary realms of alpha. Our brainwave patterns keep us locked into all of those elements of our outer world, as if they are real. When you are stuck in high beta, it's hard to learn. Very little new information can enter into your nervous system that's not equal to the emotion you are experiencing. The truth is, the problems you're so busy analyzing can't be resolved within the emotion you are analyzing them in. Why not? Well, your analysis is creating higher and higher frequencies of beta. Thinking in this mode causes your brain to overreact. You reason poorly and think without clarity. In view of the emotions that grip you, you're thinking in the past and trying to predict the next moment based on the past, and your brain can't process the present moment. There's no room for the unknown to show up in your world. You're feeling separate from the quantum field and can't even entertain new possibilities for your circumstances. Your brain isn't in creative mode. It's fixated on survival, preoccupied with possible worst-case scenarios, Again, not much information will be encoded into the system that is not equal to the emergency state. When everything feels like a crisis, your brain makes survival the priority, not learning. The answer lies outside the emotions you're wrestling with and the thoughts you're overanalyzing, because they keep you connected to your past, the familiar, and the known. Solving your problems begins with getting beyond those familiar feelings and replacing your scattered focus on the big three with a more orderly mode of thinking. As you can imagine, when the brain is in high beta and you're processing sensory information involving the environment, your body, and time, that activity can create a bit of chaos. Along with understanding that the electrical impulses in your brain occur in a certain quantity, cycles per second, it's also important to be aware of the quality of the signal. Just as the discussion of quantum creating showed how vital it is to send a coherent signal into the field to indicate your intended future outcome, the same coherence is essential to your thinking and your brainwaves. At any one time when you're in the beta range of frequencies, one of the big three will have more of your attention. If you're thinking about being late, your emphasis is on time. That thought is sending a higher frequency wave through your neocortex. Of course, you're also aware of, and therefore sending electromagnetic impulses related to, your body and the environment. It's just that in the case of the latter two, you're sending different wave patterns with a lower frequency through the neocortex. Your time-focused brainwaves might look like this. Your environment-focused brainwaves might look like this. Your body-focused brainwaves might look like this. Your fractured attention, caused by trying to focus simultaneously on all of the big three, then would produce a brainwave pattern that might look like this. As you can see, those three different patterns together during stress produce an incoherent signal in high beta mode. If you're anything like me, you've had experiences when the last drawing represents how your thoughts felt. Scattered. When we are plugged into all three dimensions, the environment, the body, and time, the brain tries to integrate their varied frequencies and wave patterns. That takes up an enormous amount of processor time and space. If we can eliminate our focus on any one of those, the patterns that emerge will be more coherent and will be better able to process them. Refer Figure 8D, the difference between a coherent and an incoherent signal. Here is a way for you to know if you're in beta state. If you're constantly analyzing, I call this being in analytical mind, you are in beta and you're not able to enter into the subconscious mind. The expression paralysis by analysis is an apt one here. Well, that's what's happening to us when we live most of our lives in that beta range. The only time we aren't there is when we're sleeping. Then we're in the delta range of brainwave activity. Now you might be thinking, but you said that we needed to be aware. We need to become familiar with our thoughts, feelings, patterns of responses, and so forth. Doesn't that require analysis? Actually, awareness can exist outside of analysis. When you are aware, you may think, I'm feeling angry. When you are analyzing, you go beyond that simple observation to add, why is this page taking so long to load? Who designed this stupid website? Why is it that whenever I'm in a hurry, like now, when I'm trying to get a movie listing, the internet connection is so slow? Awareness, as I mean it to be practiced here, is simply noting, watching, a thought or feeling, and moving on. Now that we've covered some basics about brainwaves in children and adults, this foundation will provide a working model. See the next five figures to help you understand the meditative process. Let's start with figure 8E on the next page. Thanks to the research into children's brainwave patterns, we know that when we are born, we are completely in the realm of the subconscious. Refer figure 8E, the early mind. Next, take a look at figure 8F. Those plus and minus signs represent how the developing child's mind learns from positive and negative identifications and associations that give rise to habits and behaviors. Here's an example of a positive identification. When an infant is hungry or uncomfortable, she cries out, making an effort to communicate in order to get her mother's attention. As the nurturing parent responds by feeding the child or changing her diaper, the infant makes an important connection between her inner and outer worlds. It only takes a few repetitions before she learns to associate crying out with being fed or becoming comfortable. It becomes a behavior. A good example of a negative association is when a 2-year-old puts his finger on a hot stove. He learns very quickly to identify the object he sees externally, the stove, with the pain he is feeling internally. And after a few tries, he learns a valuable lesson. Refer figure 8F, the developing mind. In both examples, we could say that the moment that the child notices an internal chemical change in the body, the brain perks up and pays attention to whatever it was in the outer environment that caused this alteration, be it pleasure or pain. These types of identifications and associations begin to slowly develop many habits, skills, and behaviors. As you learned, somewhere around the age of 6 or 7, as brain waves change into alpha, the child begins to develop the analytical or critical mind. For most children, the analytical mind usually finishes developing between ages 7 and 12. In figure 8G, the line that runs across the top of the circle is the analytical mind, which acts as a barrier to separate the conscious from the subconscious mind. In adults, this critical mind loves to reason, evaluate, anticipate, forecast, compare what it knows to what it's learning, or contrast knowns and unknowns. For the most part, when adults are conscious, their analytical minds are always working, and thus they are functioning in some realm of beta waves. Refer figure 8G, analytical mind. Now take a look at figure 8H. Above the line representing the analytical mind is the conscious mind, which is 5% of the total mind. This is the seat of logic and reasoning, which contributes to our will, our faith, our intentions, and our creative abilities. The subconscious mind, which makes up about 95% of who we are, consists of those positive and negative identifications and associations that give rise to habits and behaviors. Refer figure 8H, the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. Figure 8I illustrates the most fundamental purpose of meditation, represented by the arrow, to get beyond the analytical mind. When we are in this mind, we cannot truly change. We can analyze our old self, but we cannot uninstall the old programs and install new ones. Meditation opens the door between the conscious and subconscious minds. We meditate to enter the operating system of the subconscious, where all those unwanted habits and behaviors reside, and change them to more productive modes to support us in our lives. Refer to figure 8I. Meditation, getting beyond the analytical mind. Let's examine how you can learn to change gears and access other brainwave states so you can go beyond your association with the body, the environment, and time. You can naturally slow down the high-speed vigilance of the brain and body into a more relaxed, orderly, systemized pattern of brainwaves. Thus, it is quite possible to consciously alter your brainwaves from that higher frequency beta state into alpha and theta. You can train yourself to move up and down the scale of brainwaves. As you do, you will open doors to true personal change. You trespass beyond the common type of thinking that is fueled by reactions to being in survival mode. You are entering the realm of the subconscious mind. During meditation, you transcend the feelings of the body, are no longer at the mercy of the environment, and lose track of time. You forget about you as an identity. As you close your eyes, the input from the outside world is reduced, and your neocortex has less to think about and analyze. As a result, the analytical mind begins to become subdued, and electrical activity in the neocortex quiets down. Then, when you restfully pay attention, concentrate, and focus in a relaxed manner, you automatically activate the frontal lobe, which reduces synaptic firing in the rest of the neocortex. Therefore, you lower the volume to the circuits in the brain that process time and space. This allows your brain waves to naturally slow down to alpha. Now you are moving from a state of survival into a more creative state, and your brain naturally recalibrates itself to a more orderly, coherent brainwave pattern. One of the later steps of meditation, if you keep practicing, is to move into the theta wave frequency, when your body is asleep, but your mind is awake. This is a magical land. You are now in a deeper system of the subconscious and are able to immediately change those negative associations to more positive ones. It's important to remember that if you have conditioned the body to become the mind, and your body is somewhat asleep while your mind is awake, you could say that there is no more resistance from the body-mind. In theta, the body is no longer in control, and you are free to dream, change subconscious programs, and finally create from a totally unobstructed place. Once the body is no longer running the mind, the servant is no longer the master, and you are working in a realm of true power. You are like a child again, entering the kingdom of heaven. To sleep, perchance to go down, then up the ladder, naturally. When you go to sleep, you pass through the spectrum of brainwave states from beta to alpha to theta to delta. Likewise, when you wake up in the morning, you naturally rise from delta to theta to alpha to beta, returning to conscious awareness. When you come to your senses from the netherworld, you remember who you are, the problems in your life, the person sleeping next to you, the house you own, where you live. And presto, by association, you're back in beta as the same you. Some people fall very quickly through these levels like a steel ball dropping from the top of a building. Their bodies are so fatigued that their natural progression down the ladder to the subconscious states happens too rapidly. Others cannot shift gears to naturally progress down the ladder into sleep. They are hyper-focused on the cues in their lives that reinforce their addictive mental and emotional states. They become insomniacs, may take drugs to chemically alter the brain and sedate the body. Either way, sleep problems may indicate that the brain and the mind are out of sync. As a result of normal daily changes in brain chemistry, alternatively, the brain produces serotonin, primarily a daytime neurotransmitter that makes you alert, and melatonin, the nighttime neurotransmitter that begins to relax you for sleep. There are two times when the door to the subconscious mind opens: when you go to bed at night and when you wake up in the morning. So it is a good idea to meditate in the morning or evening, because it will be easier to slip into a state of alpha or theta. I like to wake up early to begin the process because while I'm still a bit dreamy, I'm still in alpha. I personally like to create from a clean slate. Others prefer the late evening. They know that the body, which was in control during the day, is now too tired to be the mind. They can create without any effort by drawing out the alpha phase and even entering into theta while they are still awake. Meditation during the middle of the day might be difficult, especially if you work in a busy office, manage a house full of kids who demand your undivided attention, or are involved in activities that require heightened concentration. At such times, you might be in a middle to high beta, and it may take more effort to slip through the door. Refer Figure 8J, Brainwave Function. Inward contemplative practices retrain the mind, body, and brain to become present instead of being stressed in anticipation of some future event you're obsessing about. Meditation also lifts the anchor of the body-mind out of the past and frees you from the emotions that keep you hooked to the same familiar life. The object in meditation is to fall like a feather down from the top of a building, slowly and steadily. You first train yourself to let your body initially relax, but keep your mind focused. Once you begin to master the skill, the ultimate goal is to let your body fall asleep while your mind stays awake or active. Here is the progression. If waking consciousness is beta, from low to high, depending on your levels of stress, once you sit up straight to keep your spine erect, close your eyes, take a series of conscious breaths and go inward, you will naturally switch from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system. You will change your physiology from the emergency protection system, fight, fright, flight, to the internal protection system for long-term building projects, growth and repair. As the body relaxes, your brainwave patterns will naturally begin to move to alpha. If done properly, meditation will shift your brain to a more coherent and orderly wave pattern. You will go from focusing on the big three to becoming no body, no thing, and no time. Now you begin to feel connected, whole and balanced, and you experience healthier, elevated emotions of trust, joy and inspiration. If our definition of mind is the brain in action, or the brain's activity when it processes different streams of consciousness, then meditation naturally produces more synchronized, coherent states of mind. On the other hand, when the brain is stressed, its electrical activity will be like the entire orchestra of musical instruments playing badly. The mind will be out of rhythm, out of balance, and out of tune. Your job is to play a masterpiece. If you persist with this band of disorderly, egocentric, self-important members who think that their individual musical instruments need to be heard above all others, and if you insist that they work together and follow your lead, there will come a moment when they will surrender to you as their leader and will act as a team. This is the moment when brain waves become more synchronized, moving from beta into alpha and theta. More individual circuits start communicating in an orderly fashion and process a more coherent mind. Your awareness shifts from narrow-minded, over-focused, obsessive, compartmentalized, survival thinking to thoughts that are more open, relaxed, holistic, present, orderly, creative and simple. This is the natural state of being we are supposed to live by. Take a look at coherence, or what is also called synchrony, the state where the brain is working in harmony. Refer Figure 8K, the difference between coherent and incoherent brainwaves. This orderly, new, synchronized signal to the body from the brain organizes all of the diverse systems into homeostasis. The cardiovascular system, digestive system, immune system, and so on all move into coherence as well. As the nervous system recalibrates itself, all of the enormous energy that was needed for survival can now be used for creation. The body begins to heal. For example, Jose, a man at one of my lectures, told me about one of his first times doing a meditation back in his 20s. In those days, he'd had 10 olive-sized warts on his left hand. He was so embarrassed by them that he often hid that hand in his pocket. One day, someone gave Jose a book on meditation. The book instructed him to simply focus on his breath and allow his mind to expand beyond the barriers of his body. One night before bed, he decided to try the process. In a matter of moments, he went from an over-focused, contracted state to a more expanded, open, focused state. As he vacated his familiar personality and became something other than his typical thoughts and feelings, he went from the habitual random thought patterns driven by the familiar ego to a more expanded sense of self. When this occurred, something shifted. The next morning when Jose woke up, all 10 warts had completely vanished. Shocked and overjoyed, he looked under the sheets for evidence of them, but found nothing. He explained that he didn't know where the warts went. I told him that they returned to the quantum field where they came from. I suggested to him that the universal intelligence that keeps order in his body naturally had done what it always does: create more order to reflect a more coherent mind. When his new subjective coherent mind matched the objective coherent higher mind, that greater power within did the healing for him. All of this happened because when he got out of the way and became no body, no thing, outside time, when he forgot about himself, his focus went from sustained disorder to sustained order. Survival to creation. Contraction to expansion. Incoherence to coherence. Then the unlimited consciousness restored order in his body and he was healed. At my workshops, I frequently ask participants to share their surprising stories of life changes. Monique, a therapist from Montreal, Quebec, recently described her own remarkable experience. For most of her adult life, Monique had lived unconsciously in a near-constant state of lack. Not enough money, not enough energy, not enough time to do the things she wanted. Now she was going through a particularly rough patch. Her office rent had risen considerably. Her house couldn't accommodate an office. She and her husband couldn't afford to send their son to the college of his choice. Their washer needed replacing, and the shaky economy had forced several clients to stop seeing her. One day, while doing the meditation you will learn in this book and pondering her life choices, Monique realized that she couldn't keep doing what she normally did: hunker down and weather the storm with a pseudo-positive, "woe is me, but things could be worse" mentality. She recognized that she'd always made decisions or sought solutions to problems from a perspective of lack of time, of money, and of energy. She had memorized that state of being. Lack became her personality. The epitome of inertia, she tended to let the chips fall where they may. Ironically, Monique had worked with her clients to overcome these very traits and to be more proactive and less reactive. With great resolve, she decided to change her personality. No longer would she let life trample her and allow things to just happen to her. Next, Monique created a template of who she wanted to be, how she wanted to think, and what she wanted to feel. She imagined herself as a woman who made all of her choices with an abundance of energy, time, and money. Most important, her goal to become this person was as firm as her vision was precise. She knew who she no longer wanted to be, and she had definitive plans for how her new self would think, feel, and behave. When we make a decision that strongly and have a clear intention for what our new reality will be like, the clarity and coherence of those thoughts produces corresponding emotions. As a result, our internal chemistry changes. Our neurological makeup is altered. We prune old synaptic connections and sprout new ones. And we even express our genetic code differently. Monique began to live her life from the perspective of someone who had plenty of money, who had abundant energy, and whose every need was met. She felt wonderful. Certainly, not all the problems from her catalogue of worries went away, but she was becoming better at living from a different mindset. Several weeks after making that firm decision, Monique was working with her last client of the day. This woman, who had grown up in France, reminisced how every month her parents had purchased a ticket in the French lottery, a tradition that she had continued. As Monique drove home that evening, she wasn't thinking about the lottery. She had never played it, believing that with her limited financial resources, such an expenditure was frivolous. Stopping for gas, she went inside to pay, and there on the counter were lottery cards for various games. On impulse, recognizing that the new Monique, who lived in abundance, could afford to take a chance on winning, she purchased a ticket. By the time Monique had stopped at a local pizzeria for a carry-out dinner and arrived home, the lottery had slipped her mind. Grabbing the pizza, she discovered that some grease had soaked through the box, stuck to the lottery card, and stained the passenger seat. She set the box on the dining table with the ticket alongside it. She told her family to start eating without her and that she'd be in the garage tending to the grease stain. While she was scrubbing away, her husband came running out.
"You won't believe it! Your lottery ticket was a winner!"
Now, you'll recall that when the quantum field responds, it does so in a way that one couldn't predict. Perhaps you're thinking, "Well, of course she won millions and lived happily ever after." Not exactly. Monique won $53,000. Was she happy? Astounded is more like it. The couple owed exactly $53,000 in credit card and auto loan debt. Monique relayed her excitement in telling us that story, but she slyly admitted that next time, instead of holding the intention that all her needs were met, she'd choose to imagine that they were met, and then some. What Monique's story illustrates is the power of creating a new state of being. She couldn't do that just by imagining that she was a new person. She had to put that new self into action. The old Monique would never have bought a lottery ticket. Her new personality aligned her behavior to match her objective, and the field responded in an entirely unexpected, yet perfectly appropriate way. Because Monique developed a new personality who seized opportunities and acted differently, she experienced new and better results in her life. New personality, new personal reality. You don't have to win the lottery to change your life, of course, but you do have to make the decision to stop being your old self, enter into the operating system where those unconscious programs exist, and then formulate a clear design for a new one. Before I wrap up this chapter, I want to bring up a subject I referenced in Evolve Your Brain, namely Buddhist monks who were studied at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. These super meditators could go into a state of coherent brainwaves well beyond what most of us are capable of. When they meditated on thoughts of loving kindness and compassion, the coherence, the signals they were putting out was nearly off the charts. Every morning during the study, they meditated while researchers monitored their brainwave activity. After that, they were sent out onto the campus and into the town to do what they wished: visit museums, go to shops, or what have you. After they returned to the research center, they underwent brain scans again, without first going back into meditation. Amazingly, despite not meditating throughout the day and being subjected to the incoherent, chaotic signals that the external world exposes us all to, they maintain the same coherent brainwave patterns they had achieved in meditation. Most of us, when faced with the profusion and confusion of stimuli that the external world produces, retreat into survival mode and manufacture the chemicals of stress. Those stress reactions are like disruptors that scramble the brain's signals. Instead, our goal is to become more like those monks. If we can produce coherent signal patterns, those synchronous waves, every day, we'll find that this coherence of signal manifests into something tangible. In time, if you can repeatedly create internal coherence like those monks did, you too may walk into the external environment and no longer suffer the self-limiting effects of its disruptive stimuli. And because of that, you won't experience the knee-jerk reactions that formerly forced you to return to the old, familiar self that you are so eager to change. By persisting with meditation and creating coherence within, you will not only remove a lot of the negative physical conditions that plague your body, but you can also progress towards that ideal self you've envisioned. Your inner coherence can counteract negative, reactionary, emotional states and allow you to unmemorize the behaviors, thoughts, and feelings that make them up. Once you've gotten to a neutral, empty state, it is far easier to engage a heightened one like compassion. It is easier to bring in pure joy or love or gratitude, or any of the elevated emotional states. That's true because those emotions are already profoundly coherent. And when you're moved through the meditative process and produce a brainwave state that reflects this purity, then you will begin to overcome the body, the environment, and time, which once produced your self-limiting emotional states. They will no longer control you. Instead, you will control them. You have now equipped yourself with the knowledge necessary to move on to the meditation discussed in Part 3, with full understanding of what you'll be doing and why. Remember that knowledge is the forerunner to experience. All the information you have read has been put there to prepare you for an experience. Once you learn to meditate and apply this to your life, you should begin to see feedback. In the following section, you will learn how to put all of this into practice and begin to make measurable changes in any area of your life. I'm reminded of the two-stage journey that many climbers make when they ascend Washington State's Mount Rainier, the highest volcano in the contiguous U.S., 14,410 feet. Leaving their car at the Paradise Jackson Visitor Center, 5,400 feet, they first trek to Camp Muir, 10,080 feet. Stopping at this base camp affords them the opportunity to look back at all the ground they've covered, assess what they've learned from the preparation and experience of that hike, receive additional practical training, and rest overnight. This overview can make all the difference when they continue on to undertake the climb to Rainier's majestic peak. The knowledge you've gained has allowed you to ascend to this point. Now you're ready to apply everything you've learned, and your newfound wisdom should inspire you to forge ahead to Part 3, where you can master the skills to change your mind and thus your life. So I invite you to pause briefly. Take a look back with appreciation for the information you acquired in Parts 1 and 2, and if you need to, review any areas you may feel are important. Then join me as you make your final preparation for the meditative journey to your own personal summit. Part 3. Stepping towards your new destiny. Chapter 9. The meditative process, introduction, and preparation. As I stated earlier, the main purpose of meditating is to remove your attention from the environment, your body, and the passage of time, so that what you intend, what you think, becomes your focus instead of these externals. You can then change your internal state independent of the outside world. Meditating is also a means for you to move beyond your analytical mind so that you can access your subconscious mind. That's crucial, since the subconscious is where all of your bad habits and behaviors that you want to change reside. Introduction. All of the information you have received up to this point has been intended to help you understand what you will be doing in this section as you learn to use the meditative process to create a new reality. And once you comprehend and repeatedly execute the how-to steps presented here, you can then work on anything that you want to change in your life. Remind yourself often that in taking these steps to change, you are pruning away the habit of being yourself so that you can create a new mind for your new future. When I do the process you are about to learn, I want to lose myself in consciousness, disassociate from my known reality, and be devoid of the thoughts and feelings that define me as the old self. In the beginning, the newness of the task you are undertaking might cause you to feel unsettled or uncomfortable. That's okay. It's just your body, which has become your mind, resisting the new training process. Understand this before you initiate your discipline and relax. Each step is designed to be easy to understand and simple to follow. Personally, I look forward to my meditation practice as much as anything I do. I find such order, peace, clarity, and inspiration that I rarely miss a day. It took some time for me to arrive at this relationship, so please be patient with yourself. Turning small steps into one easy habit. Whenever you've learned anything new that required your full attention and commitment to practice, you probably followed specific steps during your initial instruction. This makes it easier to break down the complexities of the skill or task at hand so that the mind can stay focused without being overwhelmed. In any endeavor, of course, your goal is to memorize what you're learning, so that eventually you can do it naturally, effortlessly, and subconsciously. Essentially, you want to make this new skill a habit. It's easier to comprehend and execute any new skill when by repetition you master one small task or procedure at a time, and then move on to the next. Over time, you string each step together as part of one coordinated process. The sign that you're on your way is when all of the steps start to look like one easy, fluid motion, and you produce the intended result. That's your aim in learning this meditation as a step-by-step process. For example, in learning to hit a golf ball, there are a host of cues that your mind has to process in order to have your actions match your intention. Imagine that while you're preparing to tee off for the first time, your best friend shouts, "Keep your head down, bend your knees, shoulders square and back erect. Keep your front arm straight, but loosen your grip. Shift your weight when you swing. Hit behind the ball and follow through. And my favorite, relax." All these instructions at once could throw you into a state of paralysis. What if instead you worked on one thing at a time, following a methodical order? In time, it seems logical that your swing would look like one motion. Similarly, if you were learning to cook a French recipe, you would start by following its individual steps. Do that enough times, and there would come a moment when you no longer would prepare the recipe as separate steps, but as one continuous process. You would integrate the instructions into your body-mind, merge many steps into just a few, and eventually cook the meal in half the time. You'd go from thinking to doing. Your body memorizes what you were doing as well as your mind. That's what a procedural memory is. This phenomena occurs when you do anything long enough. You begin to know that you know how. Building a neural network for meditation. Remember that the more knowledge you have, the better prepared you are for a new experience. Every meditation step you practice will have a meaning to you based on what you learned earlier in this book. Each one is based on a scientific or philosophical understanding, so that nothing is left to conjecture. The steps are presented in a specific order designed to help you memorize this process for personal change. Although I have mapped out a suggested 4-week program for you to learn the entire process, please take as much time as you need to practice each step until it becomes familiar. The best pace to set is one that is comfortable, so you never feel overwhelmed. You will begin every session by doing the previous steps you learned, then practice the new material for that week. Because it's more effective to learn some steps together, some weeks will call for you to practice 2 or more new steps. Also, I recommend that you practice each new mindful step or group of steps for at least a week before you move on to the next ones. In a few weeks, you'll build quite a neural network for meditation. Here's the suggested 4-week program. Week 1, Chapter 10. Every day do Step 1, Induction. Week 2, Chapter 11. Start every daily session by once again practicing the first step. Then add Step 2, Recognizing. Step 3, Admitting and Declaring. And Step 4, Surrendering. Week 3, Chapter 12. Start every daily session by practicing Steps 1 through 4. Then add Step 5, Observing and Reminding. And Step 6, Redirecting. Week 4, Chapter 13. Start every daily session by practicing Steps 1 through 6. Then add Step 7, Creating and Rehearsing. Please take your time and build a strong foundation. If you are already an experienced meditator and want to do more at once, that's fine. But work at following all of the instructions and committing to what you will be doing to memory. When you can concentrate on what you're doing without letting your thoughts wander to any extraneous stimuli, you will come to the point when your body actually aligns with your mind. Now your new skill will become easier and easier to do, thanks to Hebb's law of firing and wiring. The ingredients of learning, attention, instruction, and practice will develop an associated neural network to reflect your intentions. Two approaches to the meditation. Meditation option 1. Whenever you see this headphone icon, a guided induction or meditation is available. Meditation option 2. Alternatively, scripts for these guided sessions are included in the appendices, so that you can read them until you memorize the sequence, or dictate them into a recording device. Appendices A and B provide 2 techniques for the induction. Appendix C is the script for the entire meditation, encompassing all of the steps you will learn in Part 3. If you decide to use the Appendix C script to guide your meditation, then each week, please start with the steps you learned in previous weeks, then build on them by doing that week's meditation. Preparation. Preparing your tools. The right stuff. Separately from your meditation sessions, you will read some descriptive text about each step, often accompanied by questions and prompts under the heading, Opportunity to Write. I recommend that you keep a notebook handy to write down your answers. Then review your responses before you go into each day's meditation. That way, your written thoughts can serve as a roadmap to prepare you to navigate through the meditative procedures in which you will access the operating system of your subconscious. Listen up. When you are first learning the meditation steps, you may want to listen to pre-recorded guided sessions. For example, you will learn an induction technique that you will use in every one of your daily sessions. To help you reach the highly coherent, alpha brainwave state, in preparation for the approach